Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Miss Young.
The chair calls the third meeting of ALA of the ALA Council to order. Would all councilors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? At this meeting, we will again follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn off your cell phones and other electronic devices that make sound. If you need to make a call, please do so outside of council chambers. Also, please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. You may use only that descriptor. Your voting record is at your place. The card you should have received this morning is blue. If you must leave before adjournment, please be sure to take your voting card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors, and we have well over 75 councilors present. Therefore, we have a quorum. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolve clauses should be read. The agenda, Council Document Number 8.3, revised 2215, and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available on the ALA Council's page of ALA Connect and at the Council Documents pickup table in this room. Again, I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up onto the stage and sit next to Keith Michael Fields shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more efficiently. Thank you. We have two items under new business to add to our agenda. ALA Council Document Number 32, Resolution on the Destruction of Libraries and Schools in Gaza in 2014, and ALA Council Document Number 35, revised 2215, Resolution urging library directors to encourage and support United for Libraries membership for each of their trustees. Do you have any other business at this time? Microphone 3.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam President. I'm Susan Schmidt, Division Counselor for United for Libraries. And before my request, I'd like to say my heartfelt thanks to Larry Romans, Counselor at Large, for being a guardian angel. And I count myself now as one of Larry's ladies. In light of TSA and the airport, I respectfully request that we move the resolution number 35 revised closer to the top of the agenda so that I may arrive at the airport on time.
Okay. The earliest that we could move it would be after the tributes.
I believe that would be very nice. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Okay. Does the group agree? Do I have consent to move Council Document Number 35?
Yes.
Yes, I hear yes. So we will move.
Thank you. My luggage and I thank you.
Microphone number 3.
Al Kagan, Cert Counselor. Just a point of information. As I mentioned last night at the council forum, our resolution on the destruction of libraries and schools in Gaza, CD number 32, has been revised, and I believe that the revision is at the table.
Yes, revisions have been distributed. Thank you. My apologies. The revised document is being reproduced, and once copies are available, we'll be sure to let you know. Seeing as there are no microphone 4.
Sorry, had to get this in. John Sandstrom, Councillor at Large. Will the revised text of CD 32 be available electronically also? Thank you. If you didn't hear, Lois Ann said yes.
Okay. Everyone always hears what Lois Ann says. Okay. All right. Hearing there are no further objections, the chair declares the agenda adopted as amended. Council Policy 8.4.2.3 provides that memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at the beginning of the last session of the ALA Council at the annual conference. I will now read the names of the persons recognized by memorial resolutions. Let us stand as I read the names of those being remembered today. Diane P. Monnier. Jean E. Lowry, Roger C. Greer, Chris Olson, Farrell Ann Akolafuz, Miriam Drake, Lois Mai Chan, Judith Hopkins, Mary Woodley, Julia Claire Blixrud, Vivian Blanche Cezno, Ernest A. D. Mattia Jr., John H. Hunter, Donald J. Sager, Leslie Feinberg, and Paul K. Cybrowski. Thank you. Be seated. Please be seated. We have received five tribute resolutions to announce today for Nathan Scott, the Ferguson Municipal Public Library, Linda H. Lord, Charles Wilt, and Tom Wheeler. Copies of the memorials and tributes are available on the council page and at the council document pickup. I now call your attention to Council Document Number 35, Revised 2215, Resolution urging Library Directors to encourage and support United for Libraries membership for each of their trustees. I call upon Councillor Susan Schmidt to speak to her resolution.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to speak to this resolution. Resolved that the American Library Association, on behalf of its members, urges all library directors to encourage and support United for Libraries memberships for each of these trustees, for each of their trustees. As we know, trustees are the backbone of our library systems, and I know that yesterday I only talked about public libraries, but there are trustees for others as well. Trustees can either have their own budget or sometimes they're under a library director's budget, but we're encouraging all library directors to look at what we have for them and for their members, trustees, to help them understand their important role and to help educate the public officials and themselves on what they should be doing and how to do it successfully. And so I thank you all for your support and encouragement, and I know you're all going to go back home and do the same thing. So thank you very much.
Is there any discussion? Microphone 4.
John Sandstrom, Councillor Arch. I would just like to note that when I opened that file that Lois Ann sent out, I found a report to Council from the Committee on Professional Ethics. Oh, is that what the untitled one is? Thank you.
Microphone 4.
Jennifer Bocher, RUSA counselor. We discussed the principle of this at the RUSA board yesterday, and RUSA board is in support of this.
Microphone 5.
Hi, Jack Martin, Rhode Island chapter counselor. I just have a question. Is there a precedent for council supporting divisions to support their to basically build membership?
I'm not aware. This is certainly something that council could pass.
Okay. Because I love United for Libraries and I totally support this. I think our other divisions might want to consider doing the same thing for annual if this passes.
Microphone 3.
Larry Rums, Counselor at Large. There's been a request that in the third whereas, the phrase "as lay people" be removed.
Yes. And that is an editorial or not an editorial. I hear objection to. Yes, Keith. Need the podium, please. The other podium, please.
Testing. This did come up for discussion this morning. There was agreement that the "as lay people" could be perceived as condescending, and I think its elimination in no way weakens it and might potentially avoid what might otherwise just be an unintended consequence.
If there's no objection, the word "lay people" will be removed from the whereas. Thank you. Seeing as there's no further discussion, we will proceed to the vote. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Would all those opposed please raise one of your hands? Thank you. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot, CD number 35, revised. I now call your attention to ALA Council document number 11.2 and ask Councillor Kent Slade, Chair of the Tellers Committee, to present the ALA Executive Board election results. Good morning, Kent.
The Tellers Committee met yesterday at 6 p.m. 148 ballots were requested, 147 ballots were returned, one ballot was void. The following three candidates were elected to three-year terms and will be seated on the Executive Board at its fall meeting on October 23rd through 25th, 2015 in Chicago. Loida A. Garcia Febo, Julius C. Jefferson Jr., and Mike L. Marlin. Thank you.
Would the newly elected Executive Board members please stand so that we can continue our applause for you. Congratulations. Thank you. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 18 through Council Document 18.1 and call upon Loida Garcia Febo, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to present her report.
Good morning. The International Relations Committee report to Council. IFLA unveiled the Lyon Declaration on Access to Information and Development at its Congress last August. The declaration positions libraries and information as foundations to success across the United Nations post-2015 development goals. ALA Council approved ALA becoming a signatory to the declaration at the annual conference in Las Vegas. There are now over 500 signatories to the declaration. IFLA is attending monthly meetings in New York to help ensure the post-2015 development goals recognize the importance and value of access to information as necessary to being successful in achieving the goals. ALA at IFLA Congress in Lyon. ALA President Kearney Young led a very strong delegation of ALA members to the IFLA World Library and Information Congress in Lyon, France, last August. In Lyon, President Young signed an agreement for a three-year partnership with the German umbrella library organization, BID, to begin in 2016. IFLA nominations for 2015 to 2019. The International Relations Office would like to thank all the various ALA units for bringing forward qualified candidates for consideration for nomination to IFLA section committees for 2015 2019. If like Congress in Columbus 2016, ALA is a member of the IFLA 2016 National Committee. Promotion for Columbus kicked off here at Midwinter with the Columbus booth. The National Committee met to continue its planning efforts. The National Committee co-chairs are Carol Diedrichs, Ohio State University, and Patrick Losinski, Columbus Metropolitan Library System. Jim Neal will serve as co-chair of the fundraising effort for fellowship to attend the Congress. SIB ALA Library Conference. ALA first SIB ALA Library Conference held during the Sharjah International Book Fair in Sharjah, United Arab Emirates in November was a huge success. The two-day conference attracted over 500 attendees from 24 countries in the region and beyond. President Carney Young was the keynote speaker. ALA staff met with the Sharjah leadership here at Midwinter to begin planning for the next conference this fall. IRC IRRT Mentoring Pilot. The IRC and the IRRT have created an international mentoring program to assist newer librarians interested in getting involved internationally with mentors. The pilot program included 25 member mentees matched with mentors from the IRRT, the IRC, and the IRC geographic subcommittees. IRC supports letter on United Nations Depository Library Program. The IRC supports Godard's efforts to have ALA send a letter to the United Nations asking for more clarification on its plans related to the Depository Libraries Program. Since Superstorm Sandy 3 years ago, the Library of Congress and other depository libraries in the United States and elsewhere have received very few documents. The United Nations needs to assure the library community of the UN's commitment to openness, transparency, and long-term preservation of its information. ALA will work with IFLA to set up a meeting with IFLA and ALA representatives in mid-February to discuss this important issue. Resolution denouncing the recent attack on Charlie Hebdo and other attacks on the freedom of expression. The IRC was pleased to work jointly with the IFC on the Charlie Hebdo resolution, which the IFC is bringing to Council. Resolution on ALA disbandment from Caterpillar, Hewlett Packard, and Motorola solutions. The IRC discussed the resolution and decided not to endorse. Resolution on the destruction of libraries and schools in Gaza in 2014. The IRC discussed the resolution but did not take action to endorse. UNESCO's 70th anniversary recognition. UNESCO was founded in 1945. For 70 years, it has helped to foster collaboration among the nations through education, science, and culture to further universal respect for justice, for the rule of law, and for human rights and fundamental freedom for the peoples of the world, without distinction of race, sex, language, or religion. The IRC would like to ask Council to recognize UNESCO on its 70th anniversary by recognizing UNESCO's 70 years of achievement and urging Congress to approve the National Interest Waiver so the United States can again pay its dues, and become a fully functioning member of UNESCO. With this resolution, we urge the continued efforts Council approved in 2013 to get the United States to again pay its dues to UNESCO to help strengthen the ability of UNESCO to be able to fulfill its mission.
Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing as there's no discussion, we proceed to the vote. Would all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. Would all those opposed please raise one of your hands? Thank you. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot CD number 18.1.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Wada, for your report. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 19 through Council Document Number 19.1 and call upon Doug Archer, Chair of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, to report.
Well, you have the written report in front of you. I will highlight three items. At last summer's conference in Las Vegas, we brought a record 14 interpretations to you. I know you all appreciated that. And we promised to bring one of those back to you for further consideration. We have taken that to heart and taken the interpretation on labeling and rating and broken it into three interpretations, which we're working on. They've been posted to ALA Connect, and we will be bringing new versions this spring for your review and then bring them to Council in San Francisco for your consideration. And also, want to highlight that the new Intellectual Freedom Manual is almost ready. In fact, the galley proofs are ready, and it should be out by April. And it will be for sale online and in the ALA store in San Francisco. And then you can read the various things that are involving the committee and the Office for Intellectual Freedom as documented here. I would just highlight one, the Privacy Week emphasis with the Adobe Digital Editions mistake. the slippage of private information into the public as it was being transmitted brought privacy to the attention of many different parts of the association that may not have had privacy as a major concern at one point. We are working with everybody concerned to raise awareness and address issues related to patron privacy, and particularly our privacy subgroup is working with LIDA's Patron Privacy Interest Group and with the Digital Content Working Group to address those concerns. And lastly, I would simply say that I heard this during meetings this week, that the Office for Intellectual Freedom is now receiving on the average of 2 new concerns phone calls a day. This is not 2 phone calls a day, because they may be talking with people on earlier issues, but 2 new incidents per day in their office. So challenges to library materials, to free expression, to freedom of speech continue to grow. So the last item is our resolution jointly prepared with the International Relations Committee. Resolution denouncing recent assaults on the freedom of expression as exemplified in the attack on Charlie Hebdo. Just to note a couple of editorial corrections in the whereases. In the very first whereas, and remember, dozens of people looked at this, and they still missed that there's an extra "the" in the second sentence, as described in Article 19, not in the Article 19. And at the end of the third line, it's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, plural, not human right. Spell checker didn't catch any of that stuff. And then I believe I should read the results.
Yes, please.
Resolve that the American Library Association denounces these bloody assaults on fundamental human rights, expresses its deepest condolences to all those associated with the publication Charlie Hebdo and to the French people, affirms its solidarity with, and I'll do it in translation, the French Library Association, reaffirms in the strongest possible terms its unwavering commitment to the advocacy and defense of intellectual freedom, including freedom of the press, freedom of speech, and freedom of expression, and directs Keith Michael Fels, Executive Director of the American Library Association, to communicate its support and resolve to François Hollande, President of the French Republic for the people of France, and to our colleagues of the French Library Association.
Is there any discussion on this motion? Microphone 4.
John Sandstrom, Councillor at Large, two things. A, I believe our executive director is Keith Michael Fields, not Fells.
Sorry.
And second, my understanding is that we do not include resolves for telling Keith where to send things anymore. That is part of the electronic resolution process and not part of the resolve statements. Is that correct?
The chair of the resolutions committee. Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Councillor at Large. That is correct. That should go in the e-form.
And I think it makes a stronger resolution.
It's not a problem. We've been in the habit of filing this as part of our report and not going through the e-form, so we'll correct that.
So does that mean we need a motion to strike resolve number 5?
If it's the consent of the group, we can take care of that. It's housekeeping. Thank you. Microphone 3.
Christian Zbriski, Councillor at Large. I have some concerns about this resolution. Our president, Courtney Young, responded with a public statement that was very strong in a very timely manner. I personally did some research, and less than 10 libraries in the United States collect Charlie Hebdo. We weren't that interested in them before this. I personally don't think that ALA has to have a resolution against murder. I think we can take that as a given. And this is not really a library issue. It didn't happen in a library. There weren't librarians. I absolutely understand and respect and support the Intellectual Freedom Commission and the work that you guys do. I think it's amazing. But my concern is that when we get into a situation where everything is important, nothing is important. And we have very important matters that we need to be dedicating our bandwidth to in libraries and moving libraries forward in America. Thank you very much.
Seeing as there is no further discussion, we'll move to the vote. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot, CD 19.1.
Thank you.
Thank you for your report. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 20 through 20.1 and call upon Vivian Nguyen, Chair of the Committee on Legislation, to give her report. Vivian?
Thank you, Courtney. Good morning, everyone. You do have the council document. We have one action item, which is 20.1, but I would like to point out a few highlights briefly. We talked in our report in June about a new subcommittee that COL has formulated, which we are calling FLAG, Federal Legislative Advocacy Group. You might have heard it being discussed at some of the meetings you've attended. But I am asking directly to all of you, as people who are very connected and know the work that needs to be done. The FLAG Committee is a new kind of proactive approach to advocacy, where we are trying to develop a cadre of advocates across the country so that we know that we have advocates in place as pieces of legislation move forward, and we can identify the legislators who have impact on legislation involving libraries, so that our advocates will be ready to go, trained up, and a group that we can depend on. So who are we looking for? We are looking for people who are involved with libraries, love libraries, know about libraries, but who also have a personal connection to an elected official. Not just the normal, I'm your library director, and so I need 5 minutes. We're talking about the brother-in-law, somebody who goes to church with somebody, somebody that has been maybe in their office as a staffer for years, so that we can very quickly rally the people that we need to affect the committees that are affecting the legislation concerning libraries. So in our report, there are two emails, mine and the co-chair of that subcommittee, Joan Reeves, and we urge you to send information about a contact that we can make to have somebody join our cadre. Extremely important, particularly with new legislators coming on board. We started our actual process with this subcommittee where we were actually contacting possible cadre members only about 3 weeks ago, and I am happy to say we have over 60 people already signed up in our ranks, and we are encouraged by the involvement and the participation all of you here have given us. Secondly, I would just very briefly like to mention that LSTA is up for reauthorization in 2016. We have a subcommittee that has been formulated to take input. Denise Zielinski, sorry, Denise, one of the ALA counselors, is the chair of that subcommittee. We will have our collective remarks prepared by November of 15, but at this time, it's very much wanted for you or your units or groups to give us input about what you might like to see in the remarks prepared for the reauthorization. We have had an interesting year and a wonderful rebuilding year in the Office of Government Relations. My report does list our new staff members, some of whom I think are here. COL, yes, there's Adam. As a committee, of course, work very closely with all of the staff people, and we're very happy to welcome them into the office and the work of COL. We had also mentioned a product in June that is being worked on through our grassroots advocacy subcommittee. This is a project that we had the help of consultant Stephanie Vance with. We hope to roll this out at Ledge Day, which kind of segues into my request that all of you make every effort to attend Ledge Day in Washington, D.C., May 4th and 5th. Again, with a new Congress and many new people, this is really important. Let me then move now to the action item. Resolution on preserving public access to scientific and technical reports available through the National Technical Information Service. Resolve that the American Library Association urges the United States Congress to fund the provision of digital reports held by the National Technical Information Service, NTIS, to federal agencies and the public at no charge through NTIS, as well as the preservation of print and microfilm collections, so they will remain available for sale to the public on a cost recovery basis. And urges the United States Congress to ensure that a national repository is selected, statutorily charged, and funded to preserve and provide public access to these important scientific and technical reports if NTIS enabling legislation is eliminated.
Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing as there is none, we will move to the vote. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. The motion passes. Please mark your ballot CD number 20.1.
I would also like to urge all of you, as we have in the past, to subscribe to District Dispatch, and also to point out that the OGR website has been updated and is clear and full of good information. I would just like to urge counselors to continue to send their resolutions to COL, particularly if there is action to Congress in them. Even if they are not going through resolutions, if they're coming through reports, we really do need to see those resolutions. And finally, as I always am wanting to do, thank you to my hardworking committee and to the Washington office staff. Couldn't do it without them, obviously. Thank you.
Microphone four.
Oop.
Oh, please. Get away. Microphone four.
Margaret Stripling, media past president. I'm sure I just missed it. But why is there nothing on the ESEA reauthorization in your report?
Well, we know that any legislation that was in existence before the end of the last Congress is gone. It all has to start all over again. We're watching very carefully, knowing what's going to come forward. On the website, we have some one-pagers that give some information about when we think things might be moving and what we should be doing. But the NTIS bill was one of the first ones that came along. That's why we have addressed that here at this conference. That was actually rather unexpected, but it came right back up on the floor almost immediately, so we had to deal with it. Most of the rest of the legislation, we don't know yet. The committees aren't even formed particularly, so we're kind of watching and waiting to see how it's going to work out. Does that help?
No. What I hear is that ESEA is going to move very quickly, that it may come up as early as February, and certainly before annual conference, that when it does come up, and come up in both houses of Congress, that every member of ALA, 57,000 members, need to know about it and need to make sure that school libraries are included in that reauthorization. And so we need to start that right now.
Well, I'm going to turn to Emily. I know that we are watching the legislation. I know there has been changes in the language, but let's let Emily give us the final information.
Okay, I just want to alert everybody to pay attention. It's not going to come up. It's going to come up before we meet again as a group.
So Emily is behind you, and maybe she can come to the microphone.
I would like to invite the Executive Director of the Washington Office, Emily Sheketoff, to microphone 4, please.
In Vivian's report, there's a section about potential upcoming legislation, and so ESEA is mentioned there. We are actively engaged with our colleagues in Chicago on this effort. In the Senate, there's a discussion draft, which ALA has submitted comments to. In the House, Congressman Klein intends to introduce legislation which does not exist yet, but the AASL executive director came to Washington, and we all met with the staff there to talk about school library issues. So we are very actively up on the Hill talking about this, and as it moves, we are in the room talking to them. But we do, as Barbara mentioned, we do very much need universal conversations with members of Congress to let people know how important this is, and not just from school librarians, but all librarians who can talk about the impact that an effective school library program has on students. So, for example, when a student who has not had an effective school library program or instruction from a school librarian gets to college, they're not prepared. And when students who have not had instruction from a school librarian try and get jobs, that they don't have the skills, and they cannot get the kinds of jobs that we would want them to be able to get. So every school needs a certified school librarian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 14 and call upon Trevor Dawes, co-chair of the Task Force on Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, to present his task force's report. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for inviting us to update you on the activities of the Task Force on Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. We're very grateful for this opportunity to share some information with you. As you know, the task force was charged in the spring of 2014, in large part in response to the grave concerns about ALA hosting its annual conference in 2016 in Orlando, and also to help develop the ways in which the association can demonstrate its commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have submitted our report, Council Document 14, and I will not repeat the contents of that report. We wanted to, and I think achieved, a task force composition that is quite diverse, and one of the perhaps most important forms of diversity represented on the task force is diversity of thought, of opinion. We have therefore had some spirited conversations about topics, EDI-related, equity, diversity, and inclusion, that are often difficult to have in today's society because of the differing views we all have. We believed it was important to have a task force ground rules that encouraged honesty, openness, and respect, and we have been operating under these guidelines. You have the report, but I do want to highlight a few things. With feedback from members, we have defined equity, diversity, and inclusion as we will be using them in our work going forward. Having these definitions in place will be important to guide our work in the future, ensuring that as a task force and as an association, we speak with one voice, at least when we're speaking about these issues. We have launched the first of several short surveys. I know the link to the survey has been posted to the council list, and I encourage you to complete the survey if you have not yet done so. The survey will be open through February 16th. We're hoping to get your opinion about how inclusive you perceive ALA to be, and to hopefully affirm the definitions of equity, diversity, and inclusion. We have not yet determined the focus of our future surveys, and naturally we will update you as we develop that information. We've been working with conference services to host a program at the annual conference in San Francisco. We've identified some potential speakers and are in negotiation to confirm. Again, we'll update you with information as it becomes available. On Sunday afternoon here at Midwinter, we hosted a Harwood-style conversation. Dr. Jorge Chiment, Vice President for Institutional Diversity and Inclusion at Rutgers University, shared a few words before the conversation, which was facilitated by former ALA President Nancy Cronick. The conversation was designed to elicit from attendees their aspirations about the type of ALA profession or community they want to see as it relates to equity, diversity, and inclusion. If you participated in one of these conversations previously, you know we don't typically have a report out on the session at the end, but the task force members have gathered the feedback and will be theming the conversations, the feedback that we got from that exercise to help us determine our next steps. We were anticipating a large audience based on the number of people who indicated their attendance in the scheduler and on the Facebook event page. And we did, in fact, have approximately 150 participants at the conversation on Sunday. As we move forward, we'll be sharing this information on our ALA Connect space, as well as at future council meetings. We're also thinking about the development of some sort of community-based service initiative that will be combined with future ALA conferences, but have not yet fully developed the idea. We're still gathering feedback both from the task force members and we'll be soliciting feedback from the members at large. The task force members have generated lots of great ideas, and we have yet to determine which are the most feasible and which will achieve the results that we hope to. I publicly acknowledge the wonderful work of my co-chair, Martin Garner, and all the members of the task force whose names are listed in the report. It has, for me, been such a pleasure to work with such a dedicated and committed group. I will take any questions now, if there are any.
Are there any questions for Mr. Dawes on his report? Microphone five.
Good morning, Tom Barthelmess, Councillor at Large. I'll begin by thanking you for all of the hard work that went into this and making special note of your comments about the respect with which you undertook your considerations. I offer this feedback in that same spirit. I have a concern about the definition of diversity, which is available on the eighth page of the document that you handed out today. My concern is that we've defined visible diversity as those things, generally those things which we cannot change, and the implication, therefore, is that invisible diversity may be changeable. There are many members of the LGBT community who are fighting against suggestions that our identity is changeable, and that causes some concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Microphone 4.
Ismail Abdullahi, Councillor at Large. I just want to know that ALA has a committee on diversity, and what is the relationship between this task force and that committee? I thought that committee is the one that takes up issues of diversity.
We are working with Alana Aiko-Moore, the chair of the ALA Committee on Diversity, as we will be working with all the committees and sections and roundtables throughout the association that are interested, have a stake in issues around diversity, equity, and inclusion. At this point, the task force is still very new, and we are trying to determine the direction in which we would like to go, but we are engaging, we are working with all, currently with the COD, and we'll be working with other committees across the association as well.
And if I think I can add also that because of the concerns that were initially brought up, I think as you started with your comments, we felt that it was very important to have a task force that was focused specifically on Orlando. But there was conscious thought in making sure that there were representatives from COD and that the liaisons from ALA staff are also from the Office for Diversity. Microphone 3. Microphone 3.
3?
Yes.
Okay. Mary Bibelow, Councillor at Large. This is simply a question of information that I'm standing here asking. Was this questionnaire put on the listserv? And could you possibly give the dates that we can complete it if we have not filled it out?
The survey was sent, it was sent to the council listserv. It was also sent by the members of the task force to all of the lists to which we subscribe. So as you can see from the representatives on the task force, that would have gotten the list out quite widely. A link to the survey is also available on the ALA website, has been featured on the advocacy diversity page, and the survey is open through February 16th, so if you have not yet completed it, there is still time to do so.
Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Councillor at Large. Invisible diversity is included in your definition of diversity, is that correct?
It
so
is.
That GLBT folks are included in this diversity?
Yes.
Thank you.
Seeing as there are no further questions, thank you, Mr. Dawes, for your report.
Thank you.
We will now take up new business. These items will be discussed in the order in which this agenda was adopted and the order in which they were submitted. I'd like to call on ALA Councillor Jane Glasby to please go to the microphone and read the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 32, Resolution on the Destruction of Libraries in Schools in Gaza in 2014. Microphone 3.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. Resolved that the American Library Association, 1, deplores the destruction and damage of cultural institutions, including schools and libraries in Gaza during the recent conflict there. 2, again calls for the protection of libraries and cultural resources in Gaza and urges the U.S. government to support the United States Committee of the Blue Shield in upholding the 1954 Hague Convention for the Protection of Cultural Property in the event of armed conflict. And three, calls upon the government of the United States, as well as other governments, intergovernmental organizations, and non-governmental organizations to provide material assistance for the reconstruction and restoration of these libraries and schools.
Would you like to speak to your resolution?
Yes, please.
Please proceed.
I think that this came up for me because of what happened last summer. It was so devastating. It was so upsetting to me to see the destruction that was happening and the loss of life in Gaza. And I think it's difficult for us to, most of us have not experienced the continual bombardment, and as children we haven't experienced that. And I think that the experience was really distressing. And I think that if you've had a chance to read all the whereas clauses, this is really heavily researched resolution, and the sources, I would urge people to go and look at the sources. And I hope you've read the whereas clauses, because we've passed motions on this in 2002, 2009, every time something like this happens, and there's a complete civilian destruction. I'm passionately against the destruction of libraries, and I think this is a really simple resolution against library destruction, and I think that's what we're about. And I think part of what ALA is doing is supporting libraries worldwide, and not just thinking about our own little affairs in our own little libraries. And the question has come up, why single out this particular destruction of libraries? And that, I think for me, that's because it was egregious. It was wholesale. It was very one-sided. And the fact that we're asking for the association to come out against this particular destruction of libraries and other cultural institutions, including schools and school libraries, doesn't mean that we can't have other motions as they come up about other destruction of libraries. I understand that people might have a kind of feeling. You can hear that I have an ethnic identity. I would be very, very happy if people wanted to pass a motion against the British government doing something that I think is against libraries and human rights. So I'm sorry, I'm a bit inarticulate. I think I was more articulate last night at forum, more passionate. But thank you.
Before we start the discussion of this particular resolution, the chair would like to note the sensitive nature of the issues that it raises. And I would like to remind everyone to keep our discussion civilized, respectful, and orderly. Microphone 4.
John Sandstrom, Councillor Large. I recognize your passion, and I feel for your passion, but having looked at these resolve clauses and the resolve clauses of the 2009 resolution, I do not see that we're doing anything new in the resolution. It's just adding more information. Therefore, I don't think we really need a new resolution. So, my opinion. Thank you very much.
Microphone 3.
Al Kagan, CERT Councillor. Also would like to state that I'm a member of Jewish Voice for Peace and Bet Shalom, which is a Israeli human rights organization that works in the occupied territories. As Jane said, this is the third time we're dealing with an attack on libraries in Gaza. And I think what is apparent to me is that I don't think people realize the scale of the destruction in Gaza this last summer. It's much worse than 2002 and 2009. I want to address the two concerns that people had at the forum last night, and that is this: first of all, that the situation is just too complicated for us to address, and secondly, that the resolution is unbalanced. So, actually, I agree that the situation in the Middle East is very complicated, but in fact, the results of the Gaza conflict on the ground are actually clear. There was massive bombing in Gaza that killed and injured thousands of people last summer, destroyed thousands of homes, displaced hundreds of thousands of people, destroyed the infrastructure of Gaza, and in the course of that, destroyed partially or fully hundreds of schools and hundreds of libraries. At least 75 of the schools that were destroyed or damaged were run by the United Nations. These were used as shelters for the displaced hundreds of thousands of people. These shelters were, and schools were bombed, and people died and were seriously injured in these shelters that were schools. We know that the United Nations told the Israeli military where these shelters were. In one case, I read last night that the UN told the Israeli military 17 times about a particular school that was hit. Now, we also know that in response to the Israeli bombing, there were crude missiles sent from Gaza to Israel, and
with respect, your time is up.
Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Majid Qadir, Chapter Counselor, West Virginia. As you could tell from my accent, I am originally not from West Virginia, but I am proud to be a West Virginian. I am proud to be a U.S. citizen. I am also proud to be of my heritage. I am not from Gaza. I am not from Gaza, but I am from that region. And I would like to thank the movers and the seconders of this one. In my community, as I indicated, I am in the inner faith circle. Whenever something happens in my hands, and the rabbi hands, and other faith communities, we stand together and go against issues that is against the humanity and the human rights. I reach out to those people in that region by reading newspapers on a daily basis, by watching TV programs. They are suffering from the destructions of these institutions and libraries. We are looking at as a humanitarian thing. We are not talking about politics over here. The children of Gaza, as well as the children all over the world, they deserve more than what they have right now. They are suffering. They have their libraries and schools in the streets. What we are asking for is just to support, build, rebuild these, and we are not talking again, as I said earlier, about politics. We are talking about accommodations for those students instead of staying in the streets and engage in gangs and some other not good activities or acts. This will help them be together in a school, in an educational environment. So I am speaking in support of this resolution, and I hope the council will pass it too. Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Stephanie Bronstein, Louisiana Chapter Counselor, asking permission to read a statement by an ALA member.
You may proceed.
Thank you. This is a statement that I agreed to read for John Schuler. With surprise and disappointment, I see the proposed ALA resolution about the destruction of libraries and schools in Gaza has come back to the council for endorsement. This statement does nothing to restore the peace or the cultural institutions lost in the region's many conflicts. Instead, it sends a signal to those ALA partners who work with us to build equitable and engaged library communities that if this resolution is endorsed by council, ALA will now stand for a limited kind of social justice and the kind of statement that is more retribution than positive plan. My 30 years as a government information librarian has taught me that the best way to resolve a difficult situation is to flood the contested area with the sunlight of transparency and knowledge. Thus, there must be better actions, statements, or resolutions that ALA groups and members could offer, instruments that truly reflect the association's policy, that champion the ideals and human rights that fully embrace the freedom of information, speech, and association. These more progressive actions take advantage of ALA's existing strengths at community building. Hang on a second while I just get this to come to you. Sorry. Okay. We can fight for justice and peace by demanding the free exchange of information, as well as the economic security that depends on a robust free market of ideas. Our association can contribute to be that staunch leader in this good and necessary global work to help restore library communities now being lost because of regional conflict, economic disaster, or natural devastation. Or as the draft resolution suggests, we can simplistically choose sides, a choosing that will not repair our world. Thank you.
Microphone 3.
I'm Emily Bergman Lama, counselor. So Lama has suggested or encouraged me to vote against this, so I just wanted to make a statement for Lama, and this is my own personal statement. The events in Gaza in the summer of 2014 were no doubt tragic to both the Palestinians and Israelis, and the respective infrastructure harmed by the violence that ensued. I'm concerned about some major omissions in the resolution text that I believe make the proposed resolution draft unacceptable in its current form. The authors cite a Washington Post article titled, "How Israeli Attacks Have Decimated Gaza Schools from August 6, 2014. A balanced resolution would have also included its sister article published in the Washington Post a week earlier titled, "Why Hamas Stores Its Weapons Inside Hospitals, Mosques, and Schools." This piece offers evidence that contradicts assertions of blame in the resolution. The author's evidence relies on Al-Ray Palestinian Media Agency, as cited in the source list. As noted in the agency's website, this is the official media agency of the government of Gaza. The government in Gaza is Hamas, the party in conflict with Israel this past summer. In this context, they cannot be considered a neutral source of dispassionate evidence. Just to remind ourselves, our own government labels Hamas as a terrorist organization. If the ALA is going to deplore the destruction and damage of cultural institutions, including schools and libraries in Gaza during the recent conflict, should we not also deplore the endangerment of cultural institutions by those firing rockets from the vicinity of those institutions? According to Reuters, nearly 4,000 rockets were fired during the period in question, but there is no mention here. The full context, if given, would sharply revise the portraits painted by the current text. These rockets are not only an important context, but certainly are also barriers to library access and threaten libraries. The resolution and its supporting evidence are lacking, and it is not ready for our support.
Microphone 4.
This microphone is bizarre. Lauren Comito, counselor at large. This summer, I spent a lot of time on Twitter watching teenage girls talk about what was happening outside of their windows in Gaza. And part of it, for me, was realizing that Gaza is the same size as Manhattan, which is just across the East River from where I live. So if the numbers are true, and public libraries were completely destroyed, and five other public libraries were partially destroyed, that would be like losing 115th Street, St. Agnes, Morningside Heights, Yorkville, the Harlem Library, Webster, and 125th Street. Not to mention the schools, like the school my daughter goes to, which could possibly be in that same area, you know, geographically bounded sort of area. Libraries are part of civic life, and as people try to be create democracy and make their lives better and create a civic life, they need the libraries to enable that to happen. when libraries are destroyed in war, it makes the recovery and the creation of that civic life not as easily done. And so I stand in support of this resolution.
Microphone three.
Larry Rumman's counselor at large. I have a question for which I ought to know the answer, but I don't. When this is sent out, do we just send out the resolved clauses, or do we include the whereases?
Call upon Keith Michael Fields. The podium.
Our formal practice is that the resolve clauses are forwarded. The resolution is available, however, as a public document as well. So,
In terms of what the resolved clauses are, it doesn't. It seems to me that it doesn't have quite the slant that the whereas clauses have, and I would have no trouble supporting the resolved clauses. I don't see here, though, where the resolution is supposed to go to, and that might make a difference in my vote.
Microphone four.
Susan Roman, Counselor at Large. I could fully support a resolution that deplores the destruction of libraries and cultural institutions around the world. But this resolution for me goes way too far and I can't support it. So I rise today to say the following reasons. We pride ourselves as librarians on building balanced collections in our libraries, showing all points of view. I don't feel that this particular resolution shows both points of view, has been pointed out by another counselor. I also, no one has brought this up, I wonder if this doesn't seriously compromise our Washington office's ability to work on the Hill effectively. I think we have, you know, we'd be compromising there. And frankly, I'll just say it out loud. In my opinion, it's viewed as anti-Semitic, and which it flies in the face of the report that we just had, the statement on good work in the area of equity, diversity, and inclusion. So I would have to vote against this resolution.
Microphone four.
Sue Camp, Counselor at Large. I am wondering where is a comparable resolution protesting the Islamic State's destruction of the libraries in the Middle East. They singled out a library and destroyed it, and I don't see that this resolution talks to that.
Microphone two.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. As we see from the whereases, ALA has a history of deploring destruction and calling for the protection of cultural property worldwide during armed conflict. This is part of a larger context in ALA that I believe is relevant. Just very recent, for instances, today we denounced the bloody assaults on fundamental human rights by passing the Charlie Hebdo resolution. Today we passed a resolution commending Ferguson and, quote, acknowledging that many libraries in the United States abroad have provided library services during times of crisis, civil unrest, or other disasters, and applauds those actions. In July, the council directed that ALA become a signator to the Lyon Declaration of Access to Information and Development. Today, we celebrated the 70th anniversary of UNESCO by urging Congress to approve the National Interest Waiver so that the United States can again pay its dues and become a fully functioning member of UNESCO. So the American Library Association appropriately takes stands on international issues on a regular basis, deploring the destruction and damage of cultural institutions, including schools and libraries, is something that I fully support. Calling for the protection of libraries and cultural resources is something I fully support. As with the U.S. government joining UNESCO, we should also be joining and supporting the U.S. Committee of the Blue Shield. We can all become individual members of the Committee of the Blue Shield. I stand in support of this resolution, and I would stand in support of resolutions deploring the destruction of cultural institutions in the State of Israel, in Mosul, Iraq, anywhere they may occur. Thank you.
Microphone four.
Thank you. Audrey Barbakoff, Councillor at Large. Thank you to CERT and all the councillors who have spoken for your passionate support of social justice and the freedom to read worldwide. But listen to the conversation that we're having in this room. A huge portion of it becomes about Israel and Gaza and our personal feelings and experiences on this one very specific conflict. This obscures ALA's focus on the real issue that should concern this body, our inclusive commitment to the freedom of libraries and ideas everywhere. I agree that involving libraries in armed conflict is a terrible act. Just weeks ago, the group known as Islamic State sacked a library in Mosul. Books of poetry, science, health, and fiction for both adults and children were removed to be burned for the express purpose of curtailing access to the ideas contained in them. If ALA passes a resolution that speaks to only one specific, narrow, time and place, we fail to acknowledge, take action, and take a stand for the protection of libraries and cultural institutions worldwide. If CERT were to bring a resolution calling for the protection of all people's rights to access information, I would happily endorse it. As it stands, I cannot support a resolution that ignores the suffering of many people in many countries while singling out one specific conflict involving a few specific groups of people for the third time to the exclusion of nearly all others. I sincerely hope that CERT will come back with a more meaningful, inclusive, and impactful resolution, which includes the defense of all people's access to free libraries and ideas everywhere in the world. Thank you.
Microphone four.
Yes, Wanda Dole, Library Research Roundtable Counselor. And my notes are very similar to the previous speaker. I, too, was going to cite the recent destruction of the Central Library in Mosul, which was reported by the IFLA listserv only yesterday, and point out Christ's destructions in Ukraine and Crimea and elsewhere. I'm totally against destruction of libraries and for the rights of readers, but I feel it's worldwide, and singling out one place does not fulfill that purpose.
Microphone three.
Karen Downing, Councillor at Large. I do not support this resolution, and I want to remind everyone we just heard a report from the chair of the International Relations Committee that that committee chose not to endorse this resolution. Thank you.
Microphone two.
Walter Betts, Texas Chapter Councillor. I move that the following resolution be inserted before Resolution 2 in the document. 2. Deplores the placement of weapons and other acts that makes libraries, schools, and other cultural resources viable military targets. And I have a second. Jennifer Bircher.
Thank you. Once it is posted on the screen, we will discuss the amendment to the resolution. Deplores the placement of weapons and other acts that make libraries, schools, and other cultural resources viable military targets. It has been inserted as a resolved number 2. Microphone 4.
Sorry about the changing of microphones. Walter Betts, Texas Chapter Counselor. I feel, this is a personal feeling, that anyone who intentionally destroys a library or other cultural resource, there's a special place in hell reserved for them. But by the same token, I feel that anyone who potentially endangers our libraries and our cultural resources by placing weapons and making them viable military targets have a similar fate. It's a very sadistic motion to make these places military targets. And so I would hope that this would make this particular motion more palatable by making it more balanced, by making it reflective of both sides of this particular issue. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Microphone 3.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. My co-sponsor and I say that we will accept that amendment as a friendly amendment, whatever the terminology is.
Since it does belong to Council at this point, Council okay. would have to.
Well, I say we support it.
So it seems we're ready to move to the vote on the amendment. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. We're going to have to take a standing vote. Would all those in favor please stand? All those in favor of the amendment, please stand. You may be seated. Would all those who oppose the amendment, please stand. We have 56 yes, 65 no, the motion is defeated. The amendment is defeated. Please mark your ballot, Council Document Number 32, revised 2-3-15, add new resolve clause. We will now return to the discussion of CD Number 32, revised 2-3-15. Microphone 3.
Al Kagan, Cert Counselor, seconder of the motion, member of Jewish Voice for Peace. I had a few more things I wanted to say, and I'm going to say them now. In response to the bombing of Gaza, there were missiles that were directed at southern Israel from Gaza by the government and other groups. We were asked last night if we knew about libraries and schools that were hit by those missiles. My response was I followed it closely. I remembered one case where there was a school that was hit. And there was actually outside of a school, a parent, one of the pupils, was severely injured. So I looked last night as much as I could to find if there were more. And I found a website called the Jewish Virtual Library, and they have a list of the rocket attacks from 2009 to the present. That was the only case that I found on that website for an attack on a school in southern Israel. There were no instances I found of attacks on libraries. Now, there may be some, but I couldn't find them last night. So I wanted to answer that question. And I wanted to answer the question of balance. People said the resolution was not balanced. It's not balanced because libraries and schools in Israel were hardly affected by what happened. But 240 libraries were damaged. It's 240 schools, and around 200 libraries were damaged or destroyed in Gaza. That's why it's not balanced, because on the ground there was no balance. Now, our tax dollars pay for these attacks on Gaza. We support Israel as our first foreign aid recipient and give them weapons. We have a responsibility, and we need to redouble our efforts, not stop our efforts in stopping these kinds of attacks. Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Stephanie Brunstein, Chapter Council, Louisiana. With all due respect, the question that was being just before this discussed in the possible amendment was not a comparison of how many schools and libraries had been bombed on either side of the conflict. It was more a concern about the fact that the government was putting munitions in places that could then be perceived as legitimate targets. And I realized that if we, that I really respected the Texas counselor's amendment, but it just isn't enough to counteract all of the other language that appears in the whereas clauses. Thank you.
Microphone 3.
Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. I guess this is sort of a point of clarification, and first I'll say I should know this, but as far as being able to quickly access the resolution forms for a particular resolution to see where they are being sent, can someone remind us where that would be if we need to do it on the fly in council? Thank you.
Could you, Mike, expand on that just a bit? I'm unsure as to what you're asking.
Well, several weeks ago, I saw a copy of the form that went with this resolution that showed all the entities to which the movers were wanting it to be directed should it pass. And Councilor Romans brought that up a little while ago, that that could influence his decision. So I was wondering, since unfortunately the movers aren't able to produce it, I'm sure it's just an oversight on their part, how we can find out, or can we simply not find out, and unfortunately we don't have that information to help us make a decision.
Great. Let me say that I cannot answer that question. Perhaps Larry Romans can.
Microphone 3.
Larry Romans, Councilor at Large. And chair of the Resolutions Committee. It was a mistake on our part, so the reason I don't know where it was sent is my fault. Normally, the e-form is included as a sheet with the resolution, and we just forgot to include it. So our apologies to the mover and the seconder, and we'll try to do a better job.
Seeing as there, microphone 4.
I hesitated to come up because a little
could
of this...
Could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm very sorry. Gail Schlachter, current ALA counselor and executive board member. I hesitated to come up because some of this has already been covered, but there's some other things that I can add, and I decided in the end that I would do it. I have prepared a little mental quiz for you, and I was going to ask you if ALA had prepared or passed resolutions protesting the destruction of several items that I was going to mention. One of them was the Institute of Egypt in Cairo, where in 2011, protesters against the government burned thousands of rare books, journals, and writings worth tens of millions of dollars, and much of what was lost was considered priceless. Or the Timbuktu Library, which contained more than 20,000 manuscripts and was burned by the Islamic militia in 2003. Or the Christian Library in Tripoli, which was burned in 2014, resulting in the loss of 80,000 manuscripts and books, and several other that Sue Cam and other people have raised. If I was going to say if you had answered yes to all of these, then you had failed the quiz. I am concerned about this targeted approach, not about the content and our need to protect the destruction, to voice opposition to the destruction of libraries and library material. But I feel that this targeted approach does not fit our core values. I'm not aware that the American Library Association has ever assigned the support of intellectual property or that of libraries in any selective ways. I think we have prided ourselves on our universal concern, action, and support for all libraries and types of materials of libraries wherever they are located, not just the ones that meet our political or certain political or social agendas. Our universal approach is the opposite of what I see in the proposed resolution, which singles out, and in a semi-unprecedented way, one country for reproach and offers a single-sided, particularly in the whereas clauses, and one-dimensional argument to a well-recognized multi-dimensional situation. And it does it in a way that does not, I think, rise to the level worthy of the American Library Association. The proposed resolution, in my mind, is ineffectual at best and damaging to the association at worst. And for those reasons, not because I don't support the need to point out at every occasion the destruction and the risk that faces libraries around the world, but for those points and many more that I don't have time to mention, I will not vote for this resolution.
Microphone three.
Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. And thank you, Counselor Schlachter, and Executive Board Member Schlachter, for detailing several deplorable situations where materials have been, cultural items and library materials have been destroyed. It's a terrible thing. As far as I know, there was a resolution a couple of years ago against the destruction of libraries and cultural artifacts in Iraq, owing to the American invasion of Iraq and some of the other groups operating in that arena. So there has been at least one other, and I know that back in the early 1990s, a resolution was introduced about the Egyptian government destroying libraries in that country. I don't believe it was passed, though. So, and perhaps there will be forthcoming resolutions against or deploring the destruction of libraries in some of these other areas, which would be a good thing, in my opinion. Thank you.
Microphone three.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. I applaud any kind of resolution against the destruction of libraries anywhere, and I would welcome a resolution for any of those libraries. I think the difference about this one and why we singled it out in particular is because of because our tax dollars go towards the destruction of those libraries, and that's my particular concern, that I would like government to know that I don't support them supporting the destruction of these libraries, and that's why this particular instance was singled out. But I do think that we should make resolutions and take a strong stand internationally for destruction of libraries and cultural institutions, schools, and school libraries. Thank you.
Seeing as there is no further discussion, we will move to the vote. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion fails. Please mark your ballot, CD number 32, revised 2315. And I would like to thank Council for how you participated in this particular discussion. I will now call upon Keith Michael Fields for his final announcements. Keith?
Thank you. I have three announcements. First of all, we received the following petitions for Counselor at Large. Wick Thomas from the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, and Sandy Wee from the San Mateo County Library in San Mateo, California. Final attendance figures for the ALA midwinter meeting, a total attendance of 10,637. That's a touch below Seattle and a couple thousand, 1,500 lower than Philadelphia in 2014. And then last but not least, if you would please place your empty portfolio in the storage boxes at the documents pickup table, we will retain them for your use at the 2015 annual conference in San Francisco.
Microphone four.
Aaron Dobbs, Councilor at Large. Just a note, I'll be sending out a note on the council list about hosting a forum for annual. And welcome to the end of one of those conferences. For those of you that have been around a while, one of those conferences was the opposite of this in Miami Beach in 1994. If you remember that at all, please laugh now. The buses ran for 40 minutes and then got stuck at a wreck. So nobody made any of our conference meetings. So this actually worked out pretty good. Give me snow over sand any day. Thank you.
Microphone number three.
Dora Ho, Councilor at Large. Just want to remind or let everybody know the Asian Pacific American Library Association is celebrating our 35th anniversary in Chicago, in San Francisco in 2015. We have a symposium the day before the actual ALA conference, and we invite all of you to join us. Thank you.
Thank you. Please check to see if you have written your name on your voting card before you pass it in. Yes, I will. I will. I've got it. Yes, I'm sorry. Microphone five.
Erica Finley, Councilor at Large. I'd like to kindly call the attention of our council to the issue that's happening right now in Kentucky libraries, where a suit has been brought by a Tea Party member there that could potentially roll back the funding of 99 out of the 104 libraries to pre-1979 levels. We're expecting to hear about this ruling any time now. And while we don't know what's going to happen and everyone has hope that it'll go well, I think there's two things that we need to be anticipating. If the appeals court sides with the libraries and the case is over, we should support KLA as they try to fix the law that caused the problem. But we should support our chapters by helping them review their state laws for similar hidden hazards for library funding. If the appeals court sides with the Tea Party and the libraries lose, we need to start talking about how what ALA can do to support the eventual 77 petition drives and 22 election days that libraries all across Kentucky must do to reset their funding to 2015 levels. ALA has national advocacy tools and initiatives that can be directed to Kentucky for a time should this case fail. Because if it fails, the state librarian in Kentucky has identified that these 99 libraries face cuts that will at least significantly reduce hours and staff, but would close others outright. It's big enough that if libraries lose the appeal, ALA needs to anticipate working in Kentucky in a big way. And no one here wants the libraries to lose. But if it has to go to a vote or a petition for 99 counties, we need to do more as an organization than hope that those election days are wins. Thank you.
If I can to what you've said, the situation in Kentucky at this point is the most significant threat to public libraries. The Office for Library Advocacy has been working with the Kentucky Library Association, and whichever way this goes, we will be looking at ways in which we can work together to provide the kind of support you've described.
I'm sorry.
Can I request that more information about what's being done be sent to the council listserv, or that you let us know where we can find out more about the work you mentioned?
Yes. Microphone three.
Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large, and my companion Vivaldi, Canine Councillor at Large. And we'd like to extend a welcome for Valdi holding court with any dog lovers in the audience who would like to come and say hi after the meeting adjourns. We'll do it maybe by the seat, but maybe also in the back of the room where there's more room. Thank you.
Thank you for that opportunity. Microphone four.
Jennifer Pocharusa, Counselor. I was just wondering if this spring there will be another virtual council or member committee in which we can participate and hear more activity before midwinter, and when will that be?
The virtual membership meeting will be on Thursday, June 4th at what time? I think 2 p.m. Central Time.
I think so.
More information will be sent out. But yes, it's on my calendar. I will be there. Microphone three. Microphone three.
Okay. Lauren Comito, Counselor at Large, while everyone's making announcements. The third Urban Librarians Conference in Brooklyn will be on March 27th, and registration opened on the 1st. It's $30, and you get pie. Yeah, we have breakfast pie, and then we have cake, and also a lot of completely awesome speakers. So come see us in Brooklyn.
Okay. Please check to see that you have written your name on your voting card before passing it to the aisles for collection. Unsigned voting cards will be voided. We have concluded our agenda. If there are no objections, the chair declares the third meeting of ALA Council adjourned. Have a safe trip, and we'll see you in San Francisco.